Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. I am delighted to welcome Dr. Holly Ordway to the show to speak about J.R.R. Tolkien. Holly is the Cardinal Francis George Professor of Faith and Culture at the Word on Fire Institute, as well as the Visiting Professor of Apologetics at Houston Christian University. She's written numerous books and articles about various members of the Inklings, but our focus today is Holly's newest book, which I've got right next to me, an absolutely fantastic spiritual biography of J.R.R. Tolkien called Tolkien's Faith, and I highly, highly recommend you get a copy of it. Well, Holly, happy Tolkien Reading Day. It's the 25th of March today. We talked about Tolkien Reading Day last week. But before we dive into today's show, we're going to be talking about Holy Week and some of the things that were important for Tolkien around that. But do you have a favourite passage of Tolkien that you will be reading today to mark Tolkien Reading Day? Or is that like asking someone to choose their favourite child?
Well, it is tough. So let's see. I'm on the road, so I think I will be reading maybe a shorter bit. Like I might return to his poem Mythopoeia, which is in the Vine Tree and Leaf, which is such a marvelous poem and really underrated. It's more people should read this. There's one little stanza from it in his essay on fairy stories, but there's a whole poem, and that whole poem is included in the UK volume Tree and Leaf, which isn't published in America, but you can order it in America, through Blackwell's or Amazon UK or whatnot. And it's a really good poem. So maybe I'll open that one up.
Great. Well, I definitely want to dive into that poem later, because it was obviously, he wrote it after his amazing encounter with Lewis at Addison's Walk. But we'll get into that in a later episode. But given that yesterday was Palm Sunday, which obviously marks the start of Holy Week, I thought we could take a look at the significance of these religious days specifically for J.R.R. Tolkien. And you say in your book that the most important period of the entire year was Holy Week. Why was that for Tolkien as a Catholic?
Well, I mean, it's leading up to the great celebration of Easter, the celebration of the resurrection of Christ. And of course, every Sunday is a little Easter. Every Sunday is a celebration of the resurrection. But Easter is the big celebration of it. It's the really, the high point of the year. And for Tolkien as a Catholic, it would be led up to by the period of Lent, 40 days. That's more penitential. There's fasting. There's different prayers. Everything in the church is more somber. Less music. Purple colors. So everything to reflect. But this is our journey through the desert, kind of walking with Jesus through those 40 days in the desert. Holy Week then takes you through, almost in real time through the last few days of Jesus's life, from entry into Jerusalem, through the experiences of the Passion, Good Friday, the crucifixion, Holy Saturday, that sort of moment, that in-between time, and then the vigil of Easter, which is really that's when the full celebration comes. you know, now is celebrated in, you know, Saturday night. And then Sunday morning is, you know, Easter Sunday, you know, the full beauty of the resurrection. So it's a very powerful narrative in a sense. It really brings you into the biblical story, and you're not just know about it. Oh yes, Jesus died for us. I know that as a thing that happened, but it really, you walk with him on that. The passion narrative is sung. You know, it's you really become participatory in a really profound way. And one of the things that you do as a Catholic during Holy Week is, on Good Friday, there's veneration of the cross. And that is, you know, veneration is not worship. We should be clear on this. It's like an honoring. It's recognizing that, you know, it is through the cross, it is through our Lord's death that we get to Easter. So we only want to get to Easter, but we have to recognize what was the price that was paid to get us to Easter. Mm-hmm. And so that veneration of the cross on Good Friday is a way of kind of bringing that home, you know, to everybody. And that was a really important part for Tolkien of Holy Week.
Well, let's talk, because there was a moment in Oxford, wasn't there, when you talk in your book, and again, I would highly recommend people buy it and read the whole book, but like this bit was so powerful, I thought, where you talk about the Basil Brooks crucifix when he's at the church in Oxford. Would you just share a little bit about that, Holly?
Yeah, that was one of the discoveries I made in researching Tolkien's faith. So at the little church, the little parish church of St. Gregory and St. Augustine, it's on the Woodstock Road, still there. And that's a parish church where Tolkien worshipped for about 20 years during his early years in Oxford. So he was a parishioner there. So a lot of his worship life is going on here. And that is where, as a parishioner, he would have gone to the Holy Week liturgies. And there's a cross, a crucifix that's now above the altar that has a little plaque on it, which you can't really read from the pews. But if you look at it up close, you see that it was given in memory of Captain Basil Brooks, who died on the Somme in the Great War, gives the date. And I learned in talking with the pastor there, Father John Zayward, that it didn't used to always be up above the altar. It used to be the cross that they used during Holy Week for veneration. So it was carried in procession, and it was held up for people to come forward and either kiss or touch as a way of honoring it. Catholicism is very incarnational. You touch things. It's very much very earthy in that sense. And this crucifix was given in honor of the late Basil Brooks by his widow, Gertrude. So this is a very beautiful memorial. And I started thinking about the date, and I realized that, you know, this is one of Tolkien's contemporaries. He was an Oxford man, an Oxford young man, recently married, as Tolkien was. Basil Brooks had only been married for a couple of months. Tolkien had only been married for also a couple of months. And Brooks was killed on the front the day before Tolkien went over to the same front lines in the Somme. So there's really a sense in which it could have been Tolkien. That could easily have been the John Ronald Rule Tolkien memorial cross given by his grieving widow, Edith. And instead, it's Basil Brooks given by his grieving widow, Gertrude. And so the fact that this memorial crucifix, you know, is, you get the image of our Lord, you know, suffering for us, that links up with the suffering and death that Tolkien saw on the front lines, the knowledge that men like him had laid down their life for their friends, you know, there. And it would have brought home the sort of immediacy of death. And I think that is a really important part of really Good Friday and the Holy Liturgy, because we all are going to die. And this is not something that most of us really like to think about, but we should at some point. And for Tolkien, that meant that when he would go forward and he would have seen that little brass, you know, pill and been reminded, this could have been me. This is a young man like me, you know, in the midst of life, we are in death, and be reminded of that. And then, of course, that leads into the promise of resurrection, because we will die, but that's not the end. And so I think that very sort of incarnational moment, the connecting up of his own memories, the horrors of the war, the sacrifice of, you know, of Captain Basil Brooks, bringing it home in a way that I imagine this probably helped to make it more real. You know, death is a real thing. Resurrection is a real thing. And I've just found it quite moving to realize that connection. And there's a photograph of it in Tolkien's Faith.
Yeah, it's a really powerful photograph. And we're going to be talking specifically about some of Tolkien and Lewis's view on suffering. But Tolkien does often broach the topic of death in his writing, doesn't he?
Yeah, in fact, he once said that this whole theme of Lord of the Rings was death and the desire for deathlessness, which is really interesting.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Well, let's move on from death and move towards Easter. So what did Easter mean to Tolkien?
Well, I think we see the importance of that in his idea of eucatastrophe, because he doesn't write a lot directly about Easter, at least not in the things that I've seen that have been published. But we can tell that it was really important to him in what he writes about this concept of eucatastrophe, especially in the epilogue of his great essay on fairy stories, because he talks about the happy ending of fairy stories, of fantasy stories, which any happy ending. But he talks about this idea of eucatastrophe. That's a word he invented. It means, you know, the good catastrophe. How can a catastrophe be good? Well, the idea is that, you know, you have what looks like the end. Despair sets in. All is lost. And then unexpectedly, you have the reprieve, the happy ending, the rescue after all hope is lost. So we see this, for instance, you know, in the rescue of Frodo and Sam from Mount Doom. Yeah, we really think all is lost. But it's not. And there's eucatastrophic moments, you know, in The Hobbit, for instance, you know, where the Battle of the Five Armies, for instance, the eagles are coming. So you have this moment where you think all is lost. It's the darkest moment, but then there's the turn and you have the happy ending. Well, that's a description of the function of the happy ending. But Tolkien goes a step further and he makes a theological connection. And he says that the Gospels are a fairy story. They're the most perfect fairy story imaginable. They just happen to be a fairy story that actually happened in history. So he says, you know, myth, you know, is part of history now. Myth was made fact. These things actually happened. This story is the best story, and it's history. So for Tolkien, these two things are not conflicting. It can be a fantastic story, and it is also history. And he goes on to say that in this story of the Gospels, the incarnation is the eucatastrophe of human history. It's the happy ending of all of human history. And then he says, within the story of the incarnation, the resurrection is the eucatastrophe of the story of the incarnation. It's the story that everyone would wish to be true. And he says that more skeptical people have been convinced of this, you know, than of any other story. And this cosmic happy ending, he says, is actually what is underlying all of our experiences of happy endings. He says that when you have a story that manages to do a successful happy ending, that catastrophic moment, he says that we are able thereby to partake in, participate in Evangelium. We get a little glimpse of Evangelium, a little glimpse of the cosmic joy. And that's such an interesting point, because Tolkien is suggesting that the reason that our hearts lift at the happy ending is that we are in some way responding to the cosmic joy of the resurrection, which is the happy ending for all of creation. And because for Tolkien, this is a thing that, this is not a story that is just a story. It happened. It's part of reality. So you don't need to know that it happened to be affected by it. So even if you don't believe in the resurrection, if you don't think it happened, but when you read a story that has a happy ending, Tolkien thinks that, well, your response is still a response to the resurrection, even though you don't know, that isn't the label that you would put on it, because it's that cosmic joy. And I think that's a really good insight into Tolkien's spirituality, the way that he sees the sort of fundamental reality of the resurrection of Christ, kind of undergirding everything that we're responding to in literature and art and in his own stories.
Holly, I'm going to wish you happy Easter, but I wonder, is there a way that Tolkien would have phrased that when talking to his contemporaries? Would he have maybe wished people happy Easter in Elvish?
No, actually, he wouldn't have. And that's an interesting point, because Tolkien invented his languages for his own, you know, entertainment and edification, but he didn't use them. I mean, he did sometimes write inscriptions on books in Elvish to people who would enjoy that. And so he might write that out. But he didn't pray in Elvish. He didn't speak in Elvish. So he did make a fairly sharp distinction between those two things. It's fun to think of him sort of speaking Elvish, but he didn't.
That's just his followers. There are lots of his followers who do speak Elvish. Apparently, Tim and Kathy Keller spoke in Elvish to each other, but I'm yet to confirm whether that is actually true.
Well, I think Tolkien would probably be sort of thrilled that his languages, you know, had enough substance. People could do that, because he was very meticulous about them. And I'm not a language specialist, so I don't know, and I don't know any Elvish. But he developed them very, very carefully. And he was very thoughtful and intentional about, you know, the meanings, and even making sure that the theological meanings were correct. So, for instance, he did a lot of work translating the Lord's Prayer into Elvish. Not that he prayed with it, but that he was using it to develop his languages. And it's interesting to see the different versions he made, because he is using the translations as a way to figure out how he should shape his language. So when he's trying to translate Our Father Who Art in Heaven, his first choice for heaven was, I'm paraphrasing from memory, you know, in the sky. And then he realized, no, that's not accurate, because heaven isn't just, you know, orbiting in space. That's theologically inaccurate. So he finds a different way, a different word formation that conveys heaven in a way that is more theologically accurate. So it's really interesting to see how he's using it to think through. He wants to make sure that his invented languages are consonant with good theology.
Holly, thank you so much, and happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com. where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.